Welcome to Lindy Upgrade Studio. Our TOEFL reading podcast helps you build the background knowledge, academic vocabulary, and useful expressions behind real TOEFL reading passages. So whether you're out for a run, at the gym, on your commute, or doing chores around the house, pop in your earbuds and let English sink in naturally.
Thank you. I'm really excited to get into today's deep dive.
Awesome. Well, let's just jump right in. So think about how you're feeling right now. What if I told you that the secret to your mood today, whether you feel focused or completely exhausted or, you know, unexpectedly happy or suddenly anxious, what if that isn't originating in your brain at all?
Right, which sounds totally counterintuitive.
Exactly. What if that feeling is actually sitting right now inside your stomach? So today we are launching a deep dive into TOEFL Academic Reading Article 04, which is titled The Human Microbiome.
And if you are preparing for the TOEFL, you probably already know that the reading section frequently features these really dense, intimidating science passages.
Oh, absolutely. Biology, ecology, human anatomy. You look at the screen and you just see this giant wall of C1 level academic vocabulary. It is so easy to feel completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, it really is. But today, our mission is to extract the exact background biology you need. We're going to dissect the complex sentence structures and really break down the vocabulary mechanics.
Right. So that way you, the listener, are fully prepared to face this exact topic on test day.
You know, the premise of this article challenges a really fundamental assumption that most of us hold about our own biology.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we tend to view the human body as this single autonomous machine, right? Like it's run entirely by the brain. But this passage introduces a completely different paradigm.
Yeah, it really flips that idea upside down.
It does. And our goal here is to analyze the mechanics of this text, not just by defining what the words mean, but by understanding exactly how these biological systems operate.
And also how test makers construct questions around them, right? Yeah,
exactly. By the end of this deep dive, you will understand the root architecture of the vocabulary, the syntax of scientific arguments, and, well, the underlying mechanisms of the microbiome itself.
Perfect. I want to start immediately with the text itself, because honestly, the author does not waste any time. The very first sentence sets the parameters for the entire passage.
Yeah, it dives right into the definition.
It really does. It reads, quote, "The human microbiome consists of trillions of microorganisms living in and on our bodies," end quote. Let's pause on the scale of that for a second. Trillions.
Right, trillions with a T.
Yeah. I mean, in conversational English, we throw words like million or billion around pretty casually, but a trillion is biologically staggering.
It is genuinely difficult to conceptualize. Just to give you some scientific context here, recent biological estimates suggest that a typical human body contains roughly 30 trillion human cells.
Okay, 30 trillion human cells. That sounds like a lot.
It is. However, that same body hosts approximately 39 trillion microbial cells.
Wait, really? 39 trillion? So they actually outnumber us.
Yeah, exactly. You are quite literally outnumbered within your own physical boundary.
Yeah.
You are mathematically less than 50% human by cell count.
That is just wild to think about.
Right. You are not a single organism. You are basically a walking, breathing ecosystem.
That completely reframes the entire concept of human health. But looking at this from the perspective of a language learner who's just staring at a TOEFL screen, the word microbiome itself looks really intimidating.
Oh, for sure. It has four syllables. It looks highly technical.
Right. And if you haven't studied biology, your first instinct might be to just panic. So how do we approach a word like this mechanically?
Well, we rely on linguistic dissection.
Mm-hmm.
Academic English, especially in the sciences, is highly modular.
Modular, like building blocks.
Exactly like building blocks. It's built like architecture, using Greek and Latin roots as the bricks. So let's look at the first block here, micro.
Okay, M-I-C-R-O.
Right. When you encounter micro as a prefix, it establishes the scale. It means something is so small, it falls below the threshold of human vision. You literally require a microscope to see it.
Okay, that makes sense. And we see that everywhere, right? Yeah. Microeconomics, microwave, microscopic.
Exactly. It's a very common prefix.
And then the middle element is bio, which, you know, indicates life or living systems or biological matter. Like a biography is the writing of a life. Biology is the study of life.
Yep, you've got very small life. But then what about that suffix, ome, O-M-E?
Yeah, we see that in words like genome or biome, but what does it actually mean?
So the suffix ome signifies a complete set, a collective whole, or a specific environment.
Okay, so it's like the big picture.
Right. For instance, a genome is the complete set of genes in an organism. A biome is a large, naturally occurring community of flora and fauna, right? Mm. Like a forest or a tundra.
Oh, I see.
Therefore, the microbiome is the complete collective environment of all the microscopic life forms residing in a specific habitat. And in this case, that habitat is the human body.
Okay, so mechanically, if we just break it down, the word is just telling us the complete environment of tiny life.
Exactly. When you look at it that way, it's entirely manageable.
It really is. But there's also a strategic structural clue in that first sentence that I definitely want to highlight for the listener.
Oh, the definition clue.
Yes. The passage says, quote, "The human microbiome consists of trillions of microorganisms."
That phrase, "consists of," is a critical syntactic signal.
How so?
Well, in academic reading, authors rarely introduce highly specialized terminology without providing a built-in definition for the reader.
Mm.
They know you might not know the word.
Right. They don't expect you to be a microbiologist.
Exactly. Mm. So they do this through apposition or explanatory phrases, things like consists of or is defined as or refers to. Sometimes they even just use a simple dash or a set of parentheses.
I see this constantly in the vocabulary and context questions on the TOEFL.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, a student will get a question asking, what does the word microbiome most likely mean? And they will just look at the options and guess blindly because they don't know the science.
Which is a huge mistake.
It is, because the answer is literally spelled out in the exact same sentence, or maybe the sentence immediately following it. The phrase consists of acts like a mathematical equal sign. Microbiome equals trillions of microorganisms.
Precisely. You do not need a dictionary if you understand how to read the syntactic clues.
That is such a good tip.
Now, the text proceeds to classify the actual residents of this ecosystem. It states, quote, "These include bacteria, viruses, fungi, and other microbes."
Right. And for a B1 or B2 learner, these might just seem like a list of synonyms for germs, like they're all just tiny things that make you sick.
Right. Functionally, they might seem the same in everyday life, but scientifically, they operate through completely different mechanisms.
And I think this is an area where having that background knowledge is incredibly helpful for reading comprehension. Because if I read bacteria and virus, honestly, my brain just thinks, oh, something that gives me a sore throat. But what is the actual mechanistic difference between these different citizens of our microscopic city?
Well, to understand the passage's later arguments about antibiotics,
mm-hmm.
we really must differentiate them. So let's start with bacteria.
Okay.
Think of bacteria as independent, single-celled biological factories.
Yeah.
They are fully alive.
Independent factories. Got it.
Yeah. They have their own cell walls. They consume nutrients. They metabolize energy. And they reproduce just by dividing themselves in half.
So they do all the work themselves.
Right. And some of these factories produce beneficial goods, while others produce toxins that make us sick.
Okay, so bacteria are self-sufficient. They function totally independently. What about viruses? Are they just like smaller bacteria?
Not at all. A virus operates under a completely different biological paradigm. In fact, a virus is arguably not even alive in the traditional sense.
Wait, a virus isn't alive?
It's highly debated. Because it's essentially just a highly compressed package of genetic code like DNA or RNA wrapped up in a protein shell.
Yeah.
It has no factory of its own.
So how does it do anything?
To replicate. A virus must physically hijack a host cell.
Oh, wow. It's almost like a malicious USB drive. Like, the USB drive doesn't have a screen or a battery or a processor. It can't do anything on its own just sitting there on a desk.
That is an exceptionally accurate mechanistic metaphor.
Really? Because the moment you plug it into a computer, which is the host cell, it forces the computer to execute its code.
Yes. The virus hijacks the cellular machinery of your body to copy itself over and over until the host cell literally bursts.
That is terrifying, but it makes so much sense. Okay, so what about the last one? Fungi.
Finally, we have fungi. Fungi, which is the plural of fungus, are eukaryotic organisms. This category includes things like yeast.
Okay, like what we use to bake bread.
Exactly. In an ecosystem, fungi often act as the chemical recyclers. They secrete enzymes into their environment to break down complex organic matter outside their bodies so that they can then absorb the nutrients.
Okay. So we have the independent factories, which are the bacteria. We have the biological USB drives, the viruses, and the chemical recyclers, the fungi.
Correct. And they are all coexisting in the exact same microscopic real estate inside you.
Which sets up a really profound question. What are they actually doing in there all day? Because they aren't just paying rent, right? The passage moves straight into their biological roles.
It does. It says, quote, "They play a pivotal role in functions such as digestion, immunity, and mood regulation."
Okay, the vocabulary in that sentence is dense and highly valuable for the TOEFL. Let's isolate that adjective. Pivotal. P-I-V-O-T-A-L.
Yes, play a pivotal role. It's a great phrase.
I see this collocation constantly in academic journals. It carries so much more weight than simply saying they are important.
It does, and that's because of the physical imagery associated with the root word, which is pivot.
Like pivoting around?
Right. A pivot is the central point or the pin or the shaft on which a larger mechanism turns or oscillates. If you remove the pivot, the entire mechanism collapses. It ceases to function entirely.
Oh, I like that. It's like the hinge of a really heavy vault door. The door itself might weigh 2 tons and be made of solid steel, but its movement entirely depends on that one small central hinge.
That's a perfect visual.
Or to use a sports application. In basketball, when a player stops dribbling, they must keep one foot planted firmly on the floor. That foot becomes their pivot. Their entire body's momentum, direction, and strategy literally revolve around that single stationary point.
Exactly. And the physical implications of that root transition perfectly into the academic meaning.
So it's not just important, it's central.
Right. If a biological process plays a pivotal role, it means it is the foundational mechanism upon which other systems rely. If the microbiome fails, digestion fails. If digestion fails, immunity fails.
It's all connected.
Yep. The collocation play a pivotal role in is an essential piece of C1 vocabulary for your active arsenal as a student.
I highly recommend you, the listener, practice using this exact collocation in your TOEFL speaking and writing sections.
It's a great way to boost your score.
Definitely. Instead of writing, technology is very important for education. You can elevate your syntax. You write, technology plays a pivotal role in modern educational frameworks.
It immediately demonstrates lexical sophistication to the graders.
It really does. Okay, so moving forward into the text, we encounter the specific functions: digestion, immunity, and mood regulation. Let's examine the mechanism of digestion first.
All right. The text explains, quote, "For instance, gut bacteria help break down food and produce essential vitamins."
The phrasal verb breakdown is really interesting here, because in conversational English, if my car breaks down, it means it stopped working. It's a bad thing. Or if a negotiation breaks down, it means it failed.
Right. It usually has a negative connotation. But in biology, it means something entirely constructive.
How so?
In biochemistry, breaking down refers to the literal dismantling of complex molecular structures into simpler, usable components, like taking apart a Lego castle to build something else.
Oh, okay.
Humans often consume complex carbohydrates, like the cellulose found in the cell walls of plants, vegetables, and grains.
But wait, I've read that human beings actually do not possess the enzymes required to digest cellulose. Like, if we eat a big bowl of raw kale, our stomach acid alone isn't enough to extract the nutrients from those tough plant fibers.
That is exactly the biological dilemma.
Hmm.
Our human genetic code does not equip us with cellulase, which is the specific enzyme needed to break those chemical bonds.
So what happens to the kale?
Well, if we did not have bacteria residing in our lower intestine, that plant fiber would pass entirely through our digestive tract without yielding any of its energy.
It would just be a total waste. Yep. So how did the bacteria solve this for us?
The bacteria in your gut do possess those specific enzymes. They intercept the complex plant fibers, and they initiate a process of fermentation.
Like how you ferment vegetables.
Exactly. They chemically break down the cellulose, and as a byproduct, they produce short-chain fatty acids, or SCFAs.
And those are good for us.
Very. These SCFAs are then absorbed by the human intestinal walls and used as a critical energy source. So the bacteria get a meal, and in return, they unlock energy that was previously totally inaccessible to the human host.
That is a phenomenal example of biological symbiosis. We basically provide the raw materials, and they act as the chemical refinery.
That's a great way to put it.
The passage also mentions they, quote, produce essential vitamins. I want to clarify the word essential for you guys listening, because in casual conversation, essential just means really necessary.
Right. Like, it is essential that I drink coffee in the morning.
Exactly. But in a scientific context, essential has a very strict technical definition.
It does. In nutritional biology, an essential nutrient, like an essential amino acid or an essential vitamin, means that the human body lacks the metabolic pathways to synthesize it internally.
So we literally cannot make it ourselves.
Right. It must be acquired from an exogenous source, meaning from outside the body. For example, vitamin K, which plays a pivotal role in blood clotting, is partially manufactured by our gut microbiota.
Wow.
Yeah, without their continuous chemical production, our bodies would face severe functional deficits.
That's incredible. Okay, so that covers digestion. But the text also lists immunity and regulation. It says they play a pivotal role in immunity. How exactly does a tiny microbe in my stomach protect me from getting a cold?
Well, the immune system is essentially the body's defense apparatus. And the root of immunity traces back to the Latin immunitatum, meaning an exemption from public service or burden.
Oh, interesting. So in this case, an exemption from disease.
Precisely. The gut microbiome basically trains the immune system. The presence of these harmless bacteria constantly interacts with the immune cells lining the intestines.
Like they're talking to each other.
Kind of. They're teaching the immune cells to distinguish between friend and foe.
Oh, so they act like sparring partners for the immune system. They keep the white blood cells trained and alert, but without actually causing an infection.
That's exactly it. Furthermore, they provide immunity through a mechanism called competitive exclusion.
Competitive exclusion, what does that mean?
The human gut has a finite amount of surface area and a finite amount of nutrients. It's a closed system.
Okay, there's only so much room.
Right. So if a pathogenic, disease-causing bacteria enters your system, it needs to attach to the intestinal wall to cause an infection.
Huh.
But if your beneficial bacteria have already occupied all the available real estate, and they've consumed all the available nutrients.
Then the invader simply starves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It starves and is just flushed out of the body.
They literally block the bad guys from setting up camp? That makes perfect logical sense.
It's a very efficient system.
It is. And the final function listed in that sentence is mood regulation. Now, the word regulation implies maintaining a balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a thermostat regulating the temperature in a house so it doesn't get too hot or too cold.
Correct.
But the idea that stomach bacteria regulate our mood, we are going to dive really deeply into the mechanism of that shortly, because it is probably the most surprising revelation in the whole passage.
It's fascinating science.
But first, we need to address what happens when this perfectly balanced system goes wrong.
Right. The text transitions into the vulnerabilities of the microbiome next.
Let's read that part. It states, quote, "Recent studies show that the microbiome can be influenced by diet, lifestyle, and medication. Antibiotics, while effective against harmful bacteria, can disrupt the balance of beneficial microbes."
Okay, from a grammatical standpoint, this sentence contains one of the most frequently tested syntactic structures on the entire TOEFL.
Which one? The concession clause.
Yes, the concession clause. Quote, "Antibiotics, while effective against harmful bacteria, can disrupt the balance."
Yeah. The conjunction while is a notorious trap for B1 and B2 learners.
It really is. In introductory English, whyadas taught as a temporal marker, right? It indicates simultaneous action.
Like, I read the book while I waited for the bus. Time-based.
Exactly. But in academic writing, wasail is heavily utilized to signal contrast or concession. It functions synonymously with although, or even though, or whereas.
So the author here isn't talking about time at all.
Not at all.
They are conceding a positive point before introducing a negative consequence. Like, even though antibiotics are incredibly effective at killing the bad bacteria that cause infections, they unfortunately disrupt the good bacteria too.
Precisely.
Why do TOEFL test makers love this structure so much? Why is it always on the exam?
Because it tests reading comprehension nuance. A TOEFL reading passage rarely presents a completely black and white argument. Science is all about trade-offs.
That's true.
Test makers will use a sentence simplification question here. They will highlight that exact sentence and ask you to choose the option that best expresses the essential information.
Oh, I've seen those. So an incorrect option might say something extreme, like antibiotics are entirely harmful to the body.
Right. Or another incorrect option might say antibiotics only target beneficial microbes.
Because it misses the other half of the sentence. So the correct answer must capture both sides of that concession. The targeted benefit, and the collateral damage.
Exactly. You have to capture the whole picture.
Let's dissect the vocabulary of that collateral damage, too. The text says antibiotics disrupt the balance. The word disrupt is a fantastic C1 term, D-I-S-R-U-P-T.
The morphology of disrupt provides a really clear map to its meaning. Let's look at the prefix dis, D-I-S. It signifies separation, removal, or moving apart.
Okay, moving apart, and the root.
The root is rupt, R-U-P-T. It originates from the Latin rumper, which means to break or to burst.
So to disrupt a system is to forcefully break it apart, interrupting its normal continuous operation.
That's exactly it.
This root family is vast, and honestly, it's incredibly useful to memorize. Like, if you know that rupt means to break, you can unlock the meaning of dozens of academic words on the test.
You have some examples?
Yeah. Think about it. If a volcano explodes and breaks out of the earth, it erupts. Erupt.
Nice one.
If you are speaking and someone breaks into the middle of your sentence, they interrupt. Interrupt.
Right.
If a high-pressure water pipe bursts, it undergoes a rupture. If an organization has a broken moral compass, it is corrupt. Co-erupt.
And if a business runs out of capital and its financial stability totally breaks, it goes bankrupt.
Bankrupt, yes. Recognizing these root networks allows you to decipher unfamiliar words really rapidly during a timed exam.
It's like having a cheat code for the vocabulary section.
It really is. So the antibiotics forcefully break apart or disrupt the balance of the microbiome. The text continues, quote, "Antibiotics disrupt the balance of beneficial microbes, which can lead to health issues like digestive problems and weakened immunity."
We have another root word right there, beneficial. B-E-N-E-F-I-C-I-A-L.
Let's break that one down.
The prefix ben, B-E-N-E, is one of the most reliable markers in the English language.
Yeah.
It unequivocally means good, well, or advantageous.
Good to know.
It is the direct opposite of mal, M-A-L, which means bad. So beneficial microbes are simply the good, health-promoting residents of the ecosystem.
We see ben in words like benefit, meaning an advantage or profit. Or benefactor, a person who gives money or help to a good cause.
Exactly.
So the passage is stating that the antibiotics wipe out our microscopic benefactors. But I want to push back on the mechanics of this for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
Why do antibiotics cause such widespread disruption? Like, why don't they just target the specific bacteria causing my throat infection?
That is an excellent question, and it really gets to the heart of the biological mechanism. Let's use an analogy.
I love analogies.
Imagine a complex, thriving garden. The plants and the crops represent your beneficial bacteria. Now imagine an invasive weed representing the pathogenic bacteria starts taking over a patch of the garden.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
A targeted approach would be carefully pulling that specific weed by hand, leaving the crops alone. But many common antibiotics are what we call broad spectrum.
So they don't differentiate between the weed and the crops.
Exactly. Taking a broad spectrum antibiotic is like dealing with the weed by pouring a heavy, toxic chemical rainstorm over the entire garden. Yeah, it absolutely eradicates the invasive weed, which, you know, might save your life if that weed is causing a lethal infection like pneumonia. But the chemical rainstorm also washes away the protective topsoil. It kills all the beneficial crops, and it leaves the ecological landscape completely barren.
And tracing the logic back to the previous paragraph, if we leave the garden barren, we lose the factories that produce our essential vitamins. We lose the workers that break down our complex carbohydrates.
Yep, they're all gone.
And we lose the sparring partners that keep our immune system vigilant. The cause and effect relationship in this text is incredibly tight.
It is. And recognizing those cause and effect chains is paramount on the test. If a TOEFL question asks, according to paragraph 3, why might a patient experience digestive issues after a course of antibiotics?
You can't just look for one word.
No. The answer requires synthesizing information from both paragraphs. The antibiotics caused a disruption which reduced the population of beneficial bacteria, which in turn halted the breakdown of food.
That logical tracking is exactly what separates a B-level reader from a C-level reader. Mm-hmm. You have to follow the dominoes as they fall.
Exactly. You follow the dominoes.
Which brings us to the most fascinating domino in the entire passage. We established earlier that the microbiome regulates mood. Now, the text explicitly connects the disruption of the stomach to the disruption of the mind.
This is where it gets really interesting.
It states, quote, "Researchers are exploring the connection between the microbiome and mental health. Certain gut bacteria produce neurotransmitters affecting brain function. An imbalance in these bacteria may be linked to conditions like depression and anxiety."
This right here is the absolute frontier of modern neuroscience and microbiology. It's a biological information highway known as the gut-brain axis.
A gut-brain axis.
Yeah. For centuries, medical science operated under a framework of Cartesian dualism, which is the idea that the brain and the body are distinct, completely separate entities. But this text shatters that notion.
Let's address the most complex piece of vocabulary in this section first, because it's a big one. Neurotransmitters. N-E-U-R-O-T-R-A-N-S-M-I-T-T-E-R-S.
That's a mouthful.
Quote, gut bacteria produce neurotransmitters. Honestly, a student seeing a 16-letter word on the screen might experience a spike in their own anxiety right there. How do we deconstruct it?
We approach it precisely the way we approached microbiome. We break it down into its three morphological components. Let's start with the prefix neuro.
Okay, N-E-U-R-O.
Neuro relates directly to the nervous system, the nerves, or the brain. We see this in words like neurology, the study of the nervous system, or in a neurosurgeon, a doctor who operates on the brain.
Okay, that's easy enough. The second component is trans, T-R-A-N-S. We encounter trans constantly. It means across, beyond, or through.
Right, like transportation is moving things across distances. A transatlantic flight goes across the Atlantic Ocean. A translation moves meaning across different languages.
Perfect. And finally, we have the root mit, M-I-T or miss, M-I-S-S.
Which is derived from Latin, meaning to send or to let go.
Ah, okay. So if you submit an assignment, you send it in. If an antenna transmits a signal, it sends it across space. If a factory emits smoke, it sends it out.
Exactly. So let's synthesize those three parts.
Mm-hmm.
Neuro, meaning nervous system, plus trans, meaning across, plus mit, meaning to send.
So a neurotransmitter is literally a chemical messenger that sends signals across the nervous system to the brain.
You nailed it. It is the chemical vocabulary that our neurons use to communicate with one another.
That makes it so much less intimidating. So serotonin and dopamine, those are neurotransmitters, right?
Yes, they are two of the most well-known neurotransmitters.
Mm.
They are responsible for regulating our feelings of happiness, reward, anxiety, focus, all of it.
Okay, now the revolutionary concept presented in this text is the source of these chemicals. Because conventional wisdom always assumed that brain chemicals were manufactured entirely inside the brain.
Naturally.
Uh-huh.
They affect the brain, so they must come from the brain.
Right, but the text says, quote, certain gut bacteria produce neurotransmitters. I have to challenge this conceptually.
Let's hear it.
How is it even possible that a single-celled organism, this microscopic factory living down in my lower intestine, is manufacturing the exact same complex chemical messengers that my human brain uses to feel joy or stress? Like, bacteria don't have brains. Why are they making serotonin?
It is a profound biological convergence. The current scientific consensus suggests that these chemical molecules, like serotonin, are incredibly ancient.
Like, older than humans?
Much older. They evolved long before the human brain even existed. Bacteria have been using these exact chemicals to signal to each other, to communicate within their own colonies, for millions and millions of years.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah. So when humans evolved, our nervous systems developed around these existing bacterial colonies. And we essentially incorporated their chemical signaling into our own biology.
So we basically just adopted their language.
Yes, exactly. In fact, current estimates suggest that up to 90% of the serotonin in the human body is produced not in the brain, but in the digestive tract, facilitated by the microbiome.
90%? That is an astonishing statistic. But wait, if the serotonin is produced down in the stomach, how does it actually affect the brain, which is locked way up inside the skull? Does it just, like, float through the bloodstream?
Well, while some signaling molecules do enter the bloodstream, there is actually a much more direct physical connection. The human body possesses a massive wandering nerve called the vagus nerve. V-A-G-U-S.
The vagus nerve. Okay.
This nerve extends from the brainstem all the way down into the abdomen, directly interfacing with the enteric nervous system of the gut.
So it's essentially a massive fiber optic cable running straight from the stomach to the brain.
A bidirectional fiber optic cable.
Yeah.
Signals travel down from the brain to the gut, which is, by the way, why you feel butterflies in your stomach when you were nervous.
Oh, that explains that.
Yeah. And signals also travel up from the gut to the brain. The bacteria produce neurotransmitters that stimulate the vagus nerve, sending rapid real-time data to the brain about the state of the environment.
This completely explains the text's next sentence. Quote, an imbalance in these bacteria may be linked to conditions like depression and anxiety. Let's look at that word, imbalance.
Good idea. The prefix im, I-M, is a variant of in, functioning here to mean not or the opposite of.
Okay, so not balanced.
Right. An imbalance is a state of equilibrium being lost. In biological terms, this is called dysbiosis. The beneficial crops in our garden have dwindled, and those inflammatory weeds have overgrown.
And if the factories producing the happiness chemicals, the serotonin, are wiped out by, say, a heavy rainstorm of antibiotics or maybe a poor diet, then the vagus nerve stops receiving those positive signals.
Exactly.
Instead, the overgrown weeds produce inflammatory chemicals. The fiber optic cable sends a stress signal up to the brain, and the host experiences clinical anxiety. The mechanism is just fascinating.
It really connects the dots.
It does. But I want to pivot slightly and look closely at the specific verbs the author uses to make this claim.
Ah, the academic hedging.
Yes. The text says, quote, may be linked to, quote, an imbalance may be linked to conditions like depression. If I am a student writing an essay, my first instinct might be to write, an imbalance in bacteria causes depression, because that sounds stronger. But the author doesn't say causes.
No, the author deliberately avoids the word causes. And this is a masterclass in academic writing. In the scientific community, declaring absolute causation is exceedingly rare.
Because it's hard to prove.
It requires an insurmountable burden of proof. Depression is a multifaceted condition. It's influenced by genetics, trauma, environment, and neurochemistry. Claiming that gut bacteria is the sole definitive cause would be scientifically irresponsible.
So instead, they use cautious associative language, maybe linked to, associated with, correlated with, or may contribute to. You called this hedging.
Yes, hedging. It's a crucial skill, especially for the TOEFL independent writing task.
How should students use it?
Well, if a prompt asks for your opinion on a social issue, and you write, social media causes depression in all teenagers, the grader will view that as a naive, overly broad generalization.
You'll lose points.
Exactly. However, if you write, excessive social media consumption is closely linked to rising rates of anxiety among adolescents, you present a mature, intellectually rigorous, C1 level argument.
Because you acknowledge the complexity of the relationship without overstating the evidence, that is such a great takeaway.
It really elevates your writing.
Okay, so we have mapped out the entire problem now. We understand what the microscopic city is, we know its pivotal roles in digestion, immunity, and neurotransmitter production, and we understand how external factors like antibiotics disrupt that delicate balance, leading to a whole cascade of physical and mental health issues.
Which brings us to the final paragraph of the text.
Right, which focuses on biological maintenance and repair. Because if we wreck the garden, how do we rebuild it?
The passage provides a prescription. It says, quote, maintaining a healthy microbiome involves eating a varied diet rich in fiber, reducing stress, and avoiding unnecessary antibiotics.
I want to stop right there on the phrase avoiding unnecessary antibiotics, because this is a classic textbook example of how TOEFL reading sections formulate their trickiest multiple choice options.
Oh, the extreme language traps.
Yes. Let's analyze the adjective unnecessary. It does not say avoiding all antibiotics.
Right. In a detail or inference question, a test maker will often present an answer choice that states something like, according to the passage, an individual should completely abstain from antibiotic use to protect their microbiome.
And a test taker who is rushing through the exam, sweating the time limit, will remember the heavy rainstorm metaphor, recall that antibiotics cause disruption, and just immediately select that option.
And it will lose the point.
Yep.
Because the text earlier explicitly conceded that antibiotics are, quote, effective against harmful bacteria. If a patient contracts a severe bacterial infection, such as bacterial meningitis, an antibiotic is an absolute necessity. It will literally save their life.
So the author's prescription specifically targets unnecessary antibiotics. Like, for instance, a patient demanding an antibiotic prescription from their doctor for a viral infection, like the common cold.
Exactly, which is a very common scenario.
Right, because viruses, as we established way earlier, are those biological USB drives. They don't have cell walls. Antibiotics are designed to burst bacterial cell walls. So taking an antibiotic for a viral cold is like dropping a bomb on your beneficial bacterial garden to kill an invader that isn't even affected by the bomb.
That's the perfect way to visualize it. It is pure collateral damage with zero benefit.
So the lesson here is you must read the adjectives carefully. TOEFL answers that use absolute qualifiers like always, never, all, completely, none. Those are statistically very likely to be incorrect traps.
Whereas nuanced qualifiers, like often, some, generally, unnecessary, those are the hallmarks of accurate scientific summaries.
Exactly. Okay, moving on to the dietary solutions. The text highlights a diet rich in fiber and introduces two specific terms. Quote, bacteria that aid digestion, known as probiotics and prebiotics, are also beneficial.
Ah, yes. These two words, probiotics and prebiotics, are frequently confused because they look and sound nearly identical.
They really do. They only differ by a single vowel.
Right. But functionally, they represent two entirely different stages of ecosystem management.
I see these terms plastered all over the grocery store, you know, on yogurt containers and supplement bottles. Marketing makes them sound like magic pills. But let's look at the morphological difference. Let's break it down.
Let us begin with probiotics. P PROBITICS. The prefix pro signifies for, in favor of, or supporting.
Okay, pro means supporting.
And we already know bio means life. So a probiotic literally translates to pro-life or supporting life.
Makes sense.
In biological terms, probiotics are the actual living microorganisms. When you consume a probiotic supplement or fermented food like kimchi or live culture yogurt, you are ingesting millions of living bacterial factories.
You're trying to introduce new beneficial citizens directly into your microscopic city.
Exactly.
Okay, so probiotics equal the actual living bugs, the workers. What about prebiotics? PREBIOTICS.
The prefix pre means before or prior to. Like a preview comes before the movie. A prerequisite is a class you must complete before taking an advanced course.
Okay.
Prebiotics are what must exist before the bacteria can thrive. They are the chemical precursors, the fuel.
Wait, so prebiotics are not alive?
Correct. They are not alive. Prebiotics are complex carbohydrates and specific types of dietary fiber that the human stomach cannot digest on its own.
Like the kale we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Or an apple. When you eat an apple, the fiber travels intact through your stomach and reaches the lower intestine. That fiber is the prebiotic. It serves as the designated food source for your beneficial bacteria.
I love this mechanistic distinction. Let's create a clear mental image for the listeners.
Let's do it.
So, if your microbiome is a garden, the probiotics are the actual seeds that you plant in the dirt. But if you plant seeds in dead, barren soil, they won't grow.
Right, they'll just die.
The prebiotics are the rich fertilizer, the water, and the nutrients that you put into the soil before and during the growth cycle to ensure the seeds can actually flourish.
That is an exceptionally clear way to delineate the two concepts. You require both for ecological restoration.
You need the workers, and you need to feed them.
Exactly. You must introduce the workers, the probiotics,
yeah,
and you must provide them with the raw materials to do their jobs, the prebiotics. If you only consume probiotics but eat a diet entirely devoid of fiber, those new bacteria will simply starve and fail to colonize.
They'll just pass right through. This interconnectedness really highlights the complexity of the entire system, which brings us to the very concluding sentence of the passage.
The forward-looking statement.
Yes, the author looks to the future. Quote, as understanding of the microbiome grows, it may lead to breakthroughs in treating diseases and improving health. Let's look at that word, breakthroughs.
The noun breakthroughs is a wonderfully descriptive compound word. A breakthrough represents a sudden, dramatic, and highly significant discovery or development, particularly in science or medicine.
I always visualize it very literally.
How so?
Imagine a team of medical researchers, and they're facing this massive, impenetrable brick wall. On their side of the wall is a devastating illness, maybe a chronic autoimmune disease or severe treatment-resistant depression. And they have absolutely no idea how to cure it.
They're stuck.
Right. They push against this wall for decades, running trials, analyzing data, hitting dead ends over and over. And then finally, a piece of data provides the necessary leverage, and they literally break through the barrier to the other side, stepping into the light of a completely new medical reality.
That visual perfectly encapsulates the scientific process. The passage implies that by shifting our focus away from the brain and down to the gut, we might discover entirely new therapeutic pathways.
Like what?
Well, instead of treating depression solely with neurochemical drugs that target the brain, future breakthroughs might involve treating the microbiome, re-engineering the bacterial ecosystem to naturally restore the patient's own serotonin production.
That is just, it fundamentally changes the map of human medicine.
It really does.
Okay, before we finish up today, let's synthesize everything we have unpacked. For a TOEFL student, retaining this density of information requires active recall and structural mapping.
Let us trace the logical progression of the passage one final time to reinforce the background knowledge and the vocabulary.
Sounds like a plan. So we began with the scale and definition of the microscopic city. The human microbiome consists of, which was our syntactic clue for a definition, trillions of microorganisms.
Right. And we broke down the prefix micro, meaning small, and bio, meaning life. We differentiated the citizens too, the independent bacterial factories, the parasitic viral USB drives, and the fungal chemical recyclers.
Next, we examined their resume. We established that they play a pivotal role, a central foundational function, just like a hinge on a vault door or a pivot point in basketball.
And we learned they are responsible for digestion, actively using enzymes to break down complex fibers and manufacture essential vitamins that our own bodies literally cannot synthesize.
They also maintain our immunity through the mechanism of competitive exclusion, occupying space so pathogens cannot establish a foothold and starve out.
Then we explored the vulnerabilities of the ecosystem. We analyzed that tricky concession clause. While effective against harmful bacteria, antibiotics disrupt the balance.
Yep, the wild clause. We utilized the heavy rainstorm metaphor to understand how broad-spectrum antibiotics act indiscriminately, washing away both the weeds and the crops.
And we anchored the vocabulary by studying the prefix dis, meaning apart, and the root rupt, to break, like erupt or bankrupt or interrupt, alongside ben, meaning good, in the word beneficial.
This led us to the most complex mechanism in the text, the gut-brain axis. We learned that the microbiome heavily influences mood regulation by producing neurotransmitters,
which we dissected into neuro, nerves, trans, across, and mit to send, chemical messengers that communicate via the bidirectional vagus nerve.
We saw how an imbalance or dysbiosis in this system may be linked to, and we noted the cautious, non-causal academic hedging there, conditions like depression.
Finally, we looked at the prescription for rebuilding the system, avoiding unnecessary antibiotics, being careful not to fall for extreme language traps on the exam,
and consuming both prebiotics, the fiber fertilizer, and probiotics, the live bacterial seeds, to promote future medical breakthroughs.
The depth of biological and linguistic architecture we have covered today provides an incredibly robust foundation. You are no longer just memorizing definitions from a flashcard. You are understanding the mechanical operation of the vocabulary within the context of scientific discourse.
Absolutely. If you, the listener, encounter a TOEFL reading passage about human biology, ecology, or medicine, you now possess the analytical tools to dissect the terminology, recognize the structural traps, and follow the scientific logic. You've got this.
And as we conclude our deep dive into the microscopic universe,
yeah,
I want to leave you with one final provocative concept to consider as you navigate the physical world today.
Oh, I love these. I am ready. What is a final thought?
Well, we have spent this entire session discussing how these trillions of bacteria dictate your digestion, train your immune system, and manufacture the very chemicals that determine your emotions.
Right.
We like to believe that we are the conscious drivers of our own bodies, holding the steering wheel of our lives. But considering the sheer scale and influence of the microbiome, the next time you experience a sudden craving for a specific food, or an unexplained wave of lethargy, or a spontaneous burst of joy,
yeah,
ask yourself, are you actually the one driving the vehicle? Or are the trillions of microscopic passengers sitting in the back seat quietly steering the car?
Oh, man. That is a brilliant and slightly terrifying perspective. I will definitely never look at a stomachache, or a good mood for that matter, the exact same way again. This episode was created by Lindy Upgrade Studio. Until next time, keep upgrading your English.